thanks for your attention. Hi, I'm Misty Take, or Naomi. I use they, them pronouns, and I want to talk to you about a bit about the server side of things now. We just heard a lot about what the DeltaChat client is doing. Yeah, so I'm also from the DeltaChat team, but technically this is now about Chatmail, which is a separate project which we are also doing. Oh, sorry, I got the logo wrong actually. Naja. Chatmail is another open source project. It's at GitHub under DeltaChat/Chatmail. It's easy to find. But why do we actually do this? Because actually we are DeltaChat is an email client, right? We already work with basically any SMTP and IMAP server. So why actually focus on a Chatmail server? We had a lot of reasons which basically, yeah, made it more useful at some point to think about, okay, but how can we optimize a mail service so it works for chatting? One big problem we had, for example, is there's this UX expectation. People install our app, and then we ask them to for an email and a password, and then people think like, Ham, aren't you already an app? Why do I need to give you my email password, actually? Like, what password should I enter here now? And it was very confusing, actually. And then again, it's also, do we even want users to have to memorize passwords? In many ways, that's super inconvenient. Password managers are not very widespread, after all. You all just onboarded, right, with this QR codes, or maybe just by clicking on Create New Profile. You didn't even actually have to choose a password. You didn't have to remember one. There was one generated, actually, because it is an email account, after all. But also UX-wise, we don't really want users to have to bother with that. And when they migrate to a different device, then they have to export a backup, import it to the new device, but it will work without actually logging in somewhere. But it's rather file-based and access to device-based. We also didn't like that you needed to give personal data for registration. We don't like the rate limits many servers have because chatting is fast, and especially if you have a WebXCC app where people edit like in some editor file together, like that of course causes a lot of emails which transmit the data to each other. All of that stuff was annoying. And of course we also had a long-standing grudge on the centralization of the email system. So we wanted to make that different too and really like focus on how can we further decentralize what is currently more centralized than it has used to be. So basically Chatmail is a special kind of email server set with some configuration. And the main thing why we did it in the beginning was we wanted an open sign-up server where you don't need to give any personal data to just get an account and start chatting. Because, if you click in the app, right, create new profile, choose a name, agree and create, suddenly you have an account. Like, that's all you need to do. That was the goal here. But then again, we didn't want to become the next matrix.org. Maybe you know the login flow of matrix element, for example. Everyone in the end is on matrix.org. That's also not what we wanted. So we, from the beginning, focused on, okay, how can we make this as decentralized as possible? So right now, we have this one main server where you onboard when you just click on agree and create and don't go through the hassle of scanning one of these QR codes or clicking on use other server and trying to find another server. You will go there at some point. But for that, at the moment we are building up a decentralized Chatmail server network. And the main way to do that is to make email hosting as easy as possible again. When I started doing sysadmin stuff, I basically taught all of this myself without having a professional education or so. People told me, don't ever do mail servers. And you probably heard of that notion as well, right? So we want to have a mail server with which you can tell your teach your children how to do sysadmin. And it's quite easy. Basically, you clone our repository. It comes with a small command line tool. You can use the init command to generate a config file. You can use the run command to then run a setup script, which already just sets up the server. And maybe you know the PyInfra. Who knows PyInfra here? Okay, who knows Ansible? Yeah. Ansible is PyInfra just with YAML files. PyInfra is Ansible with Python files instead of YAML files. It's amazing. You can do all your control flow logic in Python instead of this YAML shit. You can use Python libraries in your deployment stuff. It's really great. I will not go into this here, but check it out. And yeah, we are basically hiding a PyInfra script inside the cmdeploy run command. Yeah, then we have a script which generates all the DNS records you need. I mean, that's one of the big pains for many mail admins. Oh no, how does this DKIM stuff work again? Oh, how do I set my SPF record properly? Like, this command just gives you a zone file output which you can copy-paste either in some web interface or really as a zone file you just uploaded. Yeah, that's we're not the first project which did that, but I think a mail server project nowadays really needs to do this, because otherwise you will never get people to just start with this. Yeah, and then we have, because our setup is also very tested with PyTest, tests for everything, and you can just run cmdeploy test to verify that everything works. We also use that for developing for our CI, so yeah, that's it. I think it's as painless as it can get. And if you find a way to make it more painless, please open an issue. That would be great. It's also customizable in many ways. If you don't like what we use for our main instance, then it's not so hard. It's basically using POSTFIX and Dovecart, because, of course, OpenDKIM, ACME tool, and Nginx. So it actually comes with its own kind of auto-generated website, which you can edit in Markdown also. And if you check out some of those other providers which we put on the handout, they all made some edits, like someone translated it to Italian, someone else put a warning against fascists on their website, stuff like that. So it's really customizable there. And yeah, we have this PyInfra-based script for setting it up and upgrading. And right now it's PyInfra-based, but also some people in the community are working on Chef, Docker, and Ansible setups. That's not something we're interested in very much right now personally, but it would be great, of course, if people do that. We don't really have an expertise in these setups. So if you want to work on that, yeah, you're invited. Yeah, and right now we have around 12 chatmail servers out there, a bit more, I think. We have some announced on this website, on our website. And for example, those on the handout are mostly there. I think I put one there which isn't publicly advertised. This also has something to do with censorship. Because, yeah, authoritarian regimes want to block these things. And so it's always good to have some servers out there which are not public, which people can just use. Yeah. Basically, one other thing which is very important to us, because one of the big problems of our time next to billionaires and authoritarian regimes is the climate catastrophe. So we aim to use as minimal resources as possible. And yeah, a Raspi or the cheapest VPS you can find is totally enough to support hundreds of users, maybe thousands. And also, it's actually not so much an email server as you know it, because we don't actually store the messages. We are not a long-time storage provider, which many mail servers have to be. DeltaChat works like that, that basically you download the message and then it stays on the device, and deletions are not necessarily synced between devices. So you can have like 4 GB mailbox on your phone, but just 100 MB mailbox on the server. And it basically deletes the message as soon as it downloads it. Except if you have a multi-device setup, then it needs to be on the server a bit longer, so the other devices have a chance of downloading it. But we delete every message after like 30 days, I think. Unconditionally, whether it was seen or not. It's really more an email router than an email server. Yeah, and the other nice thing about having a very minimal state, because who likes states, right? Is basically we do the open sign up in a way that a login request, when you log in and the account doesn't exist yet, the account is created instead with the same password you used for logging in. So actually, if you delete an account server side, because maybe like you accidentally do an rm-rf/ or whatever, and you just run cmdeploy run again and set up the server again, the next second the app of the user logs in again, the account is recreated and nothing is lost. So actually for months before our main instance with tens of thousands of users, we didn't have a backup. Now we do for, why not? But in general, you don't really need to keep state. And this is all designed to make the minds of admins very free of worry. And yeah, to let children play with the stuff, basically. Okay. I'm going to a bit more into some details. Because you probably already thought, oh, what, they are running an open sign-up mail server out there in the wild? What about spam? I guess many of you deal with spam on a daily basis and are quite annoyed by it. We're taking a quite radical approach with it. We basically have no inbound spam filtering. It's not really necessary. None of our users really have many problems with spam because the addresses are randomly generated, 9-character alphanumeric strings. No spammer tries to brute force that to find out that address. And they're typically not published. It's a private messenger. Usually you join with a QR code or with an invite link. Yeah, so we actually don't really need inbound spam protection. And of course, then outbound, as an outbound filter, we don't want to pollute the rest of the email network. I think you're all very grateful for that. And so we do not let messages go outside which are not PGP encrypted. Basically, you need a public open PGP key of the recipient if you want to spam them. So that just doesn't happen so far. Please, if you realize that, come to us and we will figure out some solution. But yeah, so far, this is just not something spammers do. It's not economic at all. And yeah, there are enough other ways out there to spam. Technically, we also let through messages which are part of the secure join protocol handshake. I'll talk about that a bit more later. Yeah, basically...
I want to interject for the people in the back. Consider this. I mean, OpenPGP is okay. OpenPGP is known to be a problematic ecosystem. You know, it hasn't been mass adopted. And we are actually turning this into spam protection. They don't have our OpenPGP keys. We don't even have them ourselves. So even if you use one of these signups for receiving newsletters and the database of this address gets leaked, you know, they cannot just create accounts and spam around, because for the regular web sign-up, you don't specify your OpenPGP key. You know, so the database of email addresses is not usable for addressing spam to it from chatmail servers, at least. So that's a very interesting turn in OpenPGP history.
Yeah, and it works because of our contact discovery model. This is a bit different to how contact discovery usually works in email. Like you pass around your business card with an email address on it or so. And instead, you would do that with a QR code like that on those handouts in DeltaChat. Basically, this QR code signifies an invite link. It's also printed on the handout, actually. This invite link can also be shared via a second channel if you don't meet. But basically, either you are in person or you are remote. In one case, you can do a QR code scanning introduction. In the other case, you can send out an invite link, maybe via the friend who introduces you or via the other second channel you might already have. But I mean, if you are somehow remotely in contact, then you have a contact channel, which you can use to spread that invite link. There's also one third big thing, which is an interesting part of Secure Join. If you are being added to a chat group, you also get the public keys of everyone in the chat group, and they get yours. And not only that, it's also spreading the verification. Secure Join is basically the idea that, who here doesn't know how AutoCrypt works? Maybe, or? Not many, okay. How it does work. I'll explain it a bit. Basically, AutoCrypt is a standard for OpenPGP key transmission. How can you exchange OpenPGP keys? in band. So basically you put the key in a header, the AutoCrypt header, you send it around, that's it. And that's vulnerable against machine-in-the-middle attacks. So secure join is a standard which protects against machine-in-the-middle attacks against AutoCrypt keys by putting the fingerprint, I mean it's simplified now, but you put the fingerprint into the QR code or in the invite link, and then whoever scans the QR code or clicks on the invite link can then verify by sending around some emails back and forth between your two accounts that actually, yes, this is your key and it has not been tampered with by a server in the middle, by some malicious machine in the middle. That's the idea. And
wait,
no, I will come back to that later. So the green check mark you all see in the chat now, here, this one. This means that with all of those 56 chat members, you now have MITM protected OpenPGP end-to-end encryption. And I don't know who has been to a crypto party once where you like exchanged the fingerprints and verified and signed everything. This was just, we did that in the past half an hour by accident without telling you. Yeah. yeah. Now then there's the thing with, basically this is how contact discovery works. This enables us to do the spam protection stuff. I already said some things about secure join. I want to clean up with one other move. That basically email has so much metadata and that it cannot, that it's not secure because it has so much metadata. If you use with DazzleChat, you have basically the only information which is left on the server, if you look at the actual email MIME file, you have a sender, you have some recipients, you have the date, and you have the AutoCrypt header with the BGP public key. That's all you will see also as an admin for those encrypted mails. We have some plans to even reduce that for the coming year. We don't like to to promise things which are not there already, so we'll not go that much into detail. But yeah, compare that to Matrix, for example, where reactions are unencrypted, where all the group membership information is unencrypted on the server and also persisted forever instead of like being deleted as soon as you don't need the email anymore. That's a very different model here, and I think email has a bad reputation here for no reason, actually. You can do this much better. So basically, what we propose is kind of also for the whole email system to move away. I mean, a lot of this stuff will not be applicable to your mail servers at home. You don't want to be open sign up, probably, or not all of you. Maybe some of you want to run a chat mail server. That would be great. You probably cannot require OpenPGP encryption. I mean, we basically don't allow users to send out emails to normal email addresses if they don't have the PGP key of them. So that, in many ways, for email users, this is a bit counterintuitive. So we have some constraints here to basically introduce cryptography-based interoperability instead of having just centralization-based trust. How this right now. So we require OpenPGP and AutoCrypt. We do not require DeltaChat. We require that other mail servers use DKIM and strict ADKIM, strict DKIM alignment. But we do actually not require SPF or DMARC. And this is for basically for preventing from forgery. And we do have like SPF and DMARC records in our auto-generated DNS records, of course. We do not require others to use outdated standards, basically, and really try to follow the best practices here. We require also, for example, that the from header matches the login name. We require TLS encryption, so you cannot send a mail to a chat mail user without TLS encryption. That should not be possible anymore. And we can do that basically because we do this mainly for DeltaChat users. We do not and like we can move in that space because we can sacrifice some interoperability here for good practice, which is also not a solution for everyone, which is fine. I will skip that. Basically, we have still have some solutions or some suggestions for classic email admins, classic mail servers, how they can improve decentralized email based on cryptography instead of centralization. Use standards like DKIM and really enforce them. Do more than the -1 or +1 RSpamD recommendation. Like, that's a bad joke. Like, that way, DKIM isn't worth anything. Instead of like trusting block lists and IP block lists and all of that stuff. Stop graylisting, really, please. My own, the mail provider where I have my main account on, uses graylisting, and sometimes when there's someone from a new domain and I like show them my QR code, it takes 10 minutes until it's complete. That's super annoying. And it doesn't really improve anything if you could also trust cryptography instead. And then generally for your RSpamD setups, treat every OpenPGP encrypted email as ham, not spam. And treat every valid reply as ham, because most Delta Chat messages are valid replies and are PGP encrypted. So those are things which are hopefully easy to do for others, and that would be great. Thanks. So thanks. Those are the links. They're also in something. And yeah, also maybe one last thing. we did a poll in our existing Chatman operator group about how much effort it is to operate something like this. And yeah, nobody said that it's more than 2 hours a month work, and most actually, yeah. So it's quite easy to get running if anyone's interested. You can also talk later outside. Thanks. So Q&A, does anyone have questions or remarks? The question was if there is any moderation if someone malicious joins the server. Not really, because they could also then, on, like, even if you find out somehow, you can maybe disable that account by adding a character to their password file. They can join with a new account. These things need to be approached differently, I think, than with censorship. But it's also a discussion. It's more nuanced, of course, than this. This is the short answer, basically.
You said that registration and login are the same process, so that if the server account is deleted, that the new login will do a new registration, right? So what happens if that happens maliciously? How do you prevent somebody's well-known username, which other people recognize, to be hijacked by somebody
To repeat it once, how can you prevent someone squatting the email address of someone by logging in with the same username after the old account was deleted? I mean, that's an unlikely scenario, of course, because rarely user accounts are deleted. But basically, it's prevented by the attacker does not have the private key of that a person whose account was deleted. So it will show a big warning if, like, when their thing changes. And maybe try it out, like, with actually like changing the private key and messaging each other, and you will see that we don't just show a small change setup message, as long as there was a green check mark, of course. But instead actually show a warning where people are told how they can do it, what they can do about it, how they can verify via a second channel if the person changed their device maybe, and stuff like that. So the problem is also solved by cryptography, if you will. Ah, sorry. No, I mean you with the mask, sorry.
Email setups, like using our regular can like this WebXDC stuff work anyways, or does it depend on the chat level?
Yeah, the question was if WebXDC will also work with classic email accounts in DeltaChat, and yes, it does.
Okay.
Back there.
How do I move between devices?
Glad that you asked. You go to the settings, and then you click on Add Second Device, and then you click on Continue. And now I cancel this quickly because it shows a QR code. It shows a QR code which you can then use to clone, which you can scan in the same local network with another device to clone the account to a second device. It's the most usable thing we could come up with.
All right. We are a little bit at the end of the session. There was one question at some time in the very end, but I think it's over right now, right? So maybe one very final question. I don't know who was first.
So my question is, maybe I'm asking late, but how dependent is DeltaChat really on GnuPG? Could you, if you could remodel it, just rip GnuPG out and do something smaller?
We do not use GnuPG at all. Do you mean OpenPGP?
OpenPGP, OpenPGP.
I think it's not really, doesn't really make sense to rip out OpenPGP. It's the interoperable email standard. We are also all coming from that space also. I don't think that's what we would do.
Also, the complexity of OpenPGP is completely hidden.
Yeah, we have an implementation that is actually also aiming to implement post-quantum later this year in a summit. We will talk about this. We don't need to fight here. That's RPGP. It's a Rust implementation of PGP. And that is very well developed, audited, and so on. So there's currently no reason. Like, we don't have problems there. It's really working well. And there is, of course, always a possibility. If you look at this WebXDC real-time, the blog post that is pinned, I think, on the Fediverse, it uses a different encryption format. It's not PGP. Like, for the real-time communication, I mentioned already, forward secrecy and so on, it's like it's a different setup. You know, so it's not like we cannot do other things and so on, but as everything in cryptography, it really makes sense to think about it, you know, to have some process and not just jump to whatever kind of scheme you have in mind that might be great. And so we are kind of bound to using proven things, agreed with several other players, checked by many experts and so on, and rather move slowly than fast and unable to decrypt.
Sorry for the remaining questions. I think we are at the end of the session. You can maybe take some stuff offline. Thank you very much, first of all, for the speakers.